Morning.
I just want to start out by extending my thoughts and prayers to the family of Barbara Bush. She was a dear friend. I had the opportunity to meet her. Her husband, the former president, and my dad were in the same freshman class together in the House of Representatives. And so I met Barbara Bush when I was 12 years old. Later on, when I was in my 20s, Brooks Robinson and I were honorary co-chairs of Bush campaign, and had the chance to meet her many times in my life. Regardless of what your politics is, I think most people would agree she was an incredible woman, a terrific first lady and mom, and the wife of a president, the mother of a president, and just an incredible American. So I just wanted to mention her, and please keep the Bush family in your thoughts and prayers. Next, we're going to do something fun that I like to do. We're going to honor an outstanding state employee, which I think we all like to recognize people that do great things. And today we have another Customer Service Hero Award. On the evening of January 4th, Officer Vincent Couric of the Capitol Police responded to a report that a vehicle had slammed into the Schaefer Tower in Baltimore City. Officer Couric rendered immediate aid to the driver of the vehicle, who happened to be pregnant, and he ensured that a medic was called in immediately to assist with their injuries. Shortly after they responded, the car caught fire, and Officer Couric assisted the Baltimore City Police in handling this crisis and securing the scene, and he didn't stop there. His follow-up investigation revealed that a second driver caused the accident by failing to stop at a red light and had slammed into the first vehicle, causing them to crash into Schaefer Tower. So when we think of customer service, and usually when we honor people here, it's in a department somewhere where they're assisting citizens with licenses or applications or answering questions or helping with paperwork, but Officer Couric showed that great customer service can also prevent injury and harm to our fellow Marylanders, and we're very pleased this morning to have Private First Class Vincent Couric of the Maryland Capitol Police with us this morning. Officer Couric, congratulations, and please come up here so we can present you with an official governor's citation. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Completely concur with the governor's the concept of customer service, and I'm delighted to see that award. I also had a brief personal story about the unfortunate death of Barbara Bush. So my dad, who's 96 and still with us, went after World War II, went back to Yale to finish his undergraduate, and he describes being asked by George H.W. Bush and Mrs. Bush to dinner with he and my mother at they were in an apartment or something in New Haven. So I said, how'd the dinner go? He said, well, the dinner was great. We were there. It was a small number of people, and I was conversing and enjoying myself. And something kept pulling at my leg under the table. I said, what was that? He said, it turned out to be two-year-old George W. Bush. And he said, little did I realize that I was having dinner with a not only the future president of the United States, but two future presidents of the United States. So anyway, someday I'll get Dad to come down here again to a board meeting and share some more stories. But I concur completely with what the governor said about the legacy of Barbara Bush, and well-deserved. So, as most of you know, yesterday marked the end of the year's tax filing season, but not really, because today is now the last day, because we have to couple ourselves to the IRS. All of these TurboTax and H&R Block electronically filed returns yesterday that got held up for some reason and were unable to be accepted at the federal level, they go to the federal people before they come to us. So we're giving our folks an extra day just to stay in sync with the IRS. But I want to applaud the men and women of our Revenue Administration Division for their hard work, professionalism, and commitment over the last several months. These are 600-plus people whose responsibility is to make sure that the tax season goes smoothly. And knock on wood, it has. Over the next several weeks, we'll be working overtime to process the hundreds of thousands of tax returns that were received in the last several days. We'll continue to work diligently to process the returns from those who have filed for extension. Annually, we process about 3 million tax returns, issue more than $2 billion in refunds on average within 3 business days. As you know, Governor, my team is firmly committed to delivering the highest level of customer service to Maryland taxpayers, and an important part of that commitment is our ongoing effort to combat tax fraud and identity theft. Just last week, we suspended processing returns from 20 highly suspicious tax preparation services, and that's on top of the 54 we've blocked since the beginning of the year. Thanks to the hard work of our questionable returns detection team. Questionable return is a euphemism for outright fraud, but that's what we call it. So there have been nearly 4,000 fraudulent returns worth more than $7 million in the last month and a half that we have put aside and thankfully not sent money from the Treasury to. And we're blocking those tax preparers from which a lot of these came from. I will say that over the last 6 or 7 years, we've blocked $190 million in fraudulent tax refund requests from our office. Not, in other words, we haven't paid them. The IRS has a different approach, sadly, for the U.S. Treasury, but our approach is sophisticated algorithms that identify these questionable returns. And we're now putting aside, for every 100 returns we put aside based on this technology, 99 of them prove to be accurately describing fraud. 99 out of 100. So God bless technology. We enjoy a reputation as one of the most effective and efficient comptroller's offices in the country, and I applaud not just the 600 folks in our revenue administration, but also the other 500 who are in compliance and other important responsibilities. I remain grateful for their dedication to respectful, responsive, results-oriented service, and I am privileged to lead that agency because of the exemplary public servants who work there. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Can I ask a question? Sure. This is a fantastic record, and we've been watching it for some time, and I know you've had meetings explaining it all. If we got the algorithms to essentially find that high a proportion of the fraud, and I think we do, can we do more to get that word out so that you can prevent it as well as Sketchup? Because I would think if people knew there was a 99% chance that they were going to be caught. Of course, everybody thinks he's different and he's smarter than the next guy. But there's got to be some that would be discouraged.
Such a refreshing question, because most people want to know what the algorithm is. Me too. I feel smarter just for being able to say it. But no, that's a good point. We're actually focusing on something else, which is bringing some of the individuals responsible for the fraudulent returns to justice. We haven't really been able to, because it's so hard to find the individuals and bring them into court. If they're found guilty, send them to jail. These are just very difficult crimes to locate, because half the people that are doing it individually are in Florida, California, the Ukraine. These returns come in all over the place. So I appreciate the active asking for deterrence. I think that's good. And we're working with General Frosch to prosecute some of the tax preparers, and maybe we'll get lucky.
Screening people up may be discouraging to others, too.
Right. People said to me, is Putin responsible for the IRS thing? I said, no, I'm sure it's just a little glitch, but... you never know. But thank you for that suggestion. The problem with bringing, the staff does not want me to keep saying that we're one of the best in the country, because as soon as you do that, these hackers get challenged in a perverse way to come and try to attack us. So being recognized as a model is a two-edged sword.
Let me only add, I never met Mrs. Bush, but I very much admire a woman who says what she thinks means what she says. And that was such a lady. And we will all miss her.
Any other comment?
Not really.
We're going to get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 9 items on the Secretary's agenda. We have 3 reports of emergency procurements. We are withdrawing item 8. That will come back at the next meeting.
Great. Well, I'd like to just highlight item 9 and say that I'm very pleased that, once again, the Commission on State Debt is holding the line on the state property tax rate. Our administration is going to continue to remain fiscally responsible. We're going to continue prudent capital spending. The day after I was sworn in as governor, we submitted a budget that eliminated the $5.1 billion structural deficit we inherited. And I can tell you that the days of raiding billions of dollars in cash from the Transportation Trust Fund, the Chesapeake Bay Restoration Fund, and the Atlantic and Coastal Bays Fund, and the program Open Space are over. We're no longer backfilling those with debt in order to pay for things that are totally unrelated. And we're going to continue our fiscal vigilance to keep Maryland's fiscal house in order. And I want to especially thank all of the members of the commission, my colleagues up here, the treasurer, Treasurer Kopp, and Comptroller Franchot, along with our budget secretary, David Brinkley, our transportation secretary, Pete Ron, and the State Department of Assessments and Taxation's Director, Michael Higgs, for their hard work. In addition to holding the line on property tax, we've worked together in a bipartisan way to pass.
You also have another appointee
on
that board.
Who did I miss?
Paul Merritt, a member of the public whom you appointed.
Paul Merritt, I should thank him as well. Thank you very much. Oh, I forgot that one. But we've also worked together in a bipartisan way to pass 4 consecutive budgets without a tax increase through tax toll and fee relief for hardworking Marylanders, retirees, and small businesses. We put $1.2 billion back into our economy and back into the pockets of Marylanders. During this most recent legislative session, we also once again provided relief by protecting taxpayers from the potential of a $1.2 billion tax increase. Just wanted to highlight the great work that this group has done and not raising property taxes. I see that we have several people signed up to speak on item 4. So let's bring that up. I think first we're going to hear from the Board of Public Works Wetlands Administrator Bill Morganti, who will present the item, and then we'll hear from the folks that have signed up to speak. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Bill Morganti, Wetlands Administrator. Vulcan Construction Materials, LLC, is an aggregate supplier. They seek a license to maintenance dredge, 0.4 of an acre, at their offloading dock on the Tret Avon in Talbot County. Large barges deliver aggregate to Vulcan. The license would also authorize replacing their bulkhead and their cluster pile dolphins. I reviewed MDE's report and recommendation, a variety of other application materials, visited the project site, met with the Choptank Riverkeeper and the neighbor of the applicant, who were both opposed to the project. Among their concerns are, one, that Vulcan's barge movement causes excessive turbidity in the Tret Avon, and secondly, that the foundation to the neighbor's bulkhead next to the Vulcan barge offload site has been damaged by Vulcan's operations. My process for reviewing the project included the following. In order for me to better understand tugboat procedures, barge operations on the bay, and federal channel protocol, because the Tret Avon is a federal channel, I spoke with the Army Corps of Engineers concerning the federal channel and its management. I spoke with three local tugboat operators to really try to better understand boating procedures. I spoke with staff at the U.S. Coast Guard and also staff at DNR. I aim to better understand Vulcan's barge operations and the effect of prop dredging on state tidal wetlands. And for the record, prop dredging is soil disturbance caused at the river bottom by the propellers of boats. And this results in sediment suspension or sediment plumes in the water, detrimental to fish, oysters, and bay grasses, and generally just to water quality. The five factors typically used to evaluate state tidal wetlands, the economic factors, ecological, developmental, aesthetic, and recreational factors, were all looked at. And for this project, I'd like to highlight the economic and ecological factors because they're most important here. The economic livelihood of Vulcan, its barge operations, and its clients throughout the Eastern Shore are significant. But also important is the economic livelihood of the neighboring marina owner. The ecological factors for this project include maintenance of the health of the Tret Avon wetlands at the North Fork by preventing the prop dredging that's occurring with barge operations, since this prop dredging has negative impacts on the ecology of the North Fork. I concur with MDE's favorable report and recommendation to issue the license, but only, I believe, if the six special conditions you received are included with the license. These proposed conditions were really crafted to preserve the wetlands. They're designed to offset or mitigate the impacts of Vulcan's operations on the ecological interests of the state tidal wetlands and the economic interests of state tidal wetlands represented by the marina owner. Just a little more detail, I just want to highlight the special condition one, you know, ensures that dredging does not exceed the authorized depth and dimensions. Special conditions two and three would really limit prop dredging from harming the North Fork wetlands. Special condition four prevents free-floating barges from hitting the shoreline, causing erosion and further damaging nearby wetlands. And conditions five and six limit prop dredging in the fork, erosion at the neighboring commercial bulkhead and sediment plumes. So I just want to mention there's legal justification for these proposed conditions. Both Four Seasons 1 and Maryland Tidal Wetlands Law authorize the board to condition the granting of this state tidal wetlands license as recommended as a means to preserve the wetlands and prevent their despoilation. The Four Seasons decision requires the board to ensure that proper special conditions are with, quote, reference to the impact of the proposed dredging on the affected wetlands, unquote. So, in conclusion, with Vulcan, the board is granting a license to disturb the wetlands by dredging, but is protecting nearby wetlands from despoilation. It's critical that the license includes special conditions to offset the project economic hardship to the marina owner and any ecological hardship to the North Fork wetlands.
Did I hear you right that the MDE recommended approval without conditions, or did they?
There were conditions that were typical for a dredging project, typical for replacing the bulkhead that would have been included.
But
would
you,
not have included the
you
six.
You were recommending adding six different conditions.
Six additional, yes.
Okay. All right. Any questions before we call up the other? Well, we might bring you back to answer some questions, I think. Thank you. First, we're going to hear from Matt Pluta. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and Madam Treasurer. Thanks for the opportunity to address this permit this morning. For the record, my name is Matt Pluta, and I'm the Choptank Riverkeeper with Shore Rivers, a river protection group on the Eastern Shore with roughly 3,500 members. You'll notice that I've commented on this license since it was applied for in 2016. I've raised concerns about how the permittee's application, how the permittee's operations are and have the potential to increasingly impact the wetlands that this permit is intended to protect. As I know that you all are aware, the Tredavon River is an oyster sanctuary, and as of 2017, 380 million oyster seeds have been planted, 80.8 acres have been constructed, and most importantly, $4.61 million have been spent in restoring the oyster population in the Tredavon River. It was 4 years ago my first time on the river as a riverkeeper, and all I've heard about was this oyster restoration work. And while I was traveling down the river, I saw a barge coming up, and I thought this is going to be my chance to see it firsthand, when in fact I saw quite the opposite. I saw a barge being pushed up the river with a tail of sediment as far as you could see, and the most darkest of sediment right near the propeller. And I thought to myself, this is completely undermining the restoration efforts to protect our wetlands and also to rebuild the oyster population. For the record, I've submitted a petition with over 50 other property owners and individuals that recreate on this river who share concerns about the operations of this applicant, and the co-chair of the Oyster Advisory Commission, who's also seen these impacts firsthand, has submitted a letter for the record as well. So my point is that this permit is specifically being requested because of the accumulation and the buildup of sediment. Right? And so the exact thing that this applicant is doing to undermine the money and the efforts put towards restoring the oysters and the wetlands. I believe that this permit and any other permit that comes up in these oyster sanctuaries needs to closely consider the impacts that the activity has on oyster restoration in addition to the wetlands. I applaud Mr. Morganti's work in addressing these issues that have been raised and investigating the concerns. I concur with the special conditions that have been proposed with his recommendation, and I hope that you will do so as well. Thank you.
So at this point, you're in favor of the awarding the license with these conditions?
With the six special conditions proposed, yes.
Thank you very much.
Oh, give me, Dan, I missed the administrator. I was trying to listen, but I couldn't quite get the I assume the company has objections to these special conditions.
We're going to have them speak in a little while.
Yeah, but what specifically are the six conditions?
Yeah. Special conditions?
Maybe Mr. Morganti could come back up for the special conditions rather
than. Yeah, we've got this, John. I'd like to just.
Sure.
Unless you don't know what they are.
I have them right here in front of me.
Great. Yeah, no. I like this guy.
Yeah. I like Mr. Morganti, too.
Great. So the first two conditions, as Mr. Morganti mentioned, helps to protect from any prop dredging from the barges navigating at low tide. Uh-huh. And so we've seen evidence of them navigating, pushing heavy barges up, causing this prop dredging and suspension of sediment. Furthermore, the conditions also prevent any propeller dredging facing towards the neighboring marina property, where I believe you'll see some pictures later on showing the destruction that's happened because of this scouring that occurs as these propellers create these scour holes nearby. And then also requiring that the applicant put in a survey marker indicating where the mean low tide is so that it's visual to everybody around that these barges are operating responsibly and coming in with water depths that are, again, responsible or good enough for them to navigate the waterways. I believe that. And then they're also required to maneuver their boats outside of the North Fork, which is evident by their destruction that it's not large enough to handle two barges at once in this area without causing impacts.
And what is your name?
Matt Pluta.
Yeah, so in saying I like Matt, I don't mean to imply I don't like the administrator. I like Matt because he inspires me that young people are associated with involvement and advocacy for issues, right or wrong, wherever you are. Thank you for being, who you are, and gives me hope for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have John Schroeder.
Governors, ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Schroeder. I'm the owner of the property adjacent to Vulcan's property. I brought a couple pictures because I'm not a wordsmith. So what we're speaking about is in regard to their permit, this is the damage that incurred from the purchase of our property. We found after we bought the property, we had to rebuild the bulkhead. This is from undermining from the tug, barge. This is a situation that happens when they release the barge. It's free-floating in the Tres Avon River and smashes into the trees. It damages the banks. It scours out the banks. And I became aware of this after I bought the property. I was in no way interested in getting involved in any of this. But we've been unable to run a marina properly there because of the fact that this barge commands the whole river. The sediment that we're speaking about is dug out by the props. These barges are 300 feet long. The tugs are enormous. The river has never been able to handle something like that. And prior to them going to 300-foot barges, the history of the river was the property that I owned was a oil depot, and Vulcan was operating with smaller barges, and so was that property. And in 150-foot, the river can handle it. You get up to 300 feet, the tug increases in size. And so from the mouth of the chop tank to our point, it dredges all the way up the river. And as Matt eloquently pointed out, all the funding that's going into the oyster restoration and the grasses on the bank are being covered with dirt. Now, in this application, what we're trying to do is mitigate the damage to our property. Personally, I would like that to see happen because I can't continue to rebuild the dock as it undermines, as they push that empty barge, which they push out into the river and just let it float. And then they push the new barge full of gravel into this site. I've recommended that they do a bathymetric measurement of the sea bottom there because nobody really knows what it is. But I have done my own just with a stick, and they have plenty of water there. So now they're loading the barges heavier to get more aggregate to the site. And it's my position is that this river is a jewel. The economic damage that's happening to it far exceeds, what the monetary gain is from the gravel.
Can I ask you, what's at low tide, what is the depth of the water near your marina?
Well, right next to my marina, it's 17 feet deep at the bulkhead because it's been scoured out. But the average is 10 feet.
So, I mean, I think both you and Mr. Pluta were talking about the props are kicking up sediment and causing a problem. And it sounds like their application is to do maintenance dredging. So, I mean, wouldn't that solve the problem of the props kicking up the mud if it was deeper?
Well, no. What's going to happen is that they're going to continue to prop wash as they push forward because they have to get the empty barge out. And this whole area is being suspended, so it's moving from one place to the other. It's going to continue to happen.
But if it was deeper, would the props still kick up the same sediment?
Well, I mean, they would have to go way deep because of the size of the tug. That right now, the barge is just coming up onto the mud flat, supposedly. And that's what they're trying to dredge. And that material is going to get put out, but then the rest is going to fill in from the maneuvering of the barges in that area.
Could I ask a question of Mr. Morgandi?
Sure.
Your condition number six, wouldn't that essentially be directed against preventing this sort of problem and enhancing the wetlands, but also preventing undermining?
I think number six gets at the fact that when barges are being moved into place, that the area perhaps outside the area that's already dredged, that would be shallower, that if they're moving with a tugboat at a lower tide or low tide, then it would still hit the bottom and be able to actually affect the property next door. So I think that this is really just trying to get the tugboat operators to be pushing or manning the tugboats away from the marina next door. I mean, there's different ways they can maneuver them, approach them from one side, approach from another side, as much as I understand. But if it's okay, I want to address also the governor's question. So, you know, I think that the concerns about the prop dredging would not be the footprint of the area that's being dredged. It would really be the areas outside that are not dredged, that then by operating like at a lower tide, that could continue to happen.
So the part where they're requesting to dredge 0.4 of an acre on their property, that isn't going to help any of this problem?
Well, it will certainly help them with their offloading facility.
Yeah, I get that. But it won't help with the – right now that mud isn't being kicked up and the sediment isn't going onto your marina.
Well, I mean, the concern is that actually even the area outside the footprint.
I understand outside it might still be an issue, but does this help with part of the problem?
Sure it would. I would think it would by dredging that footprint.
Not to get into too crazy detail, but the federal channel is 40 feet from the edge of my bulkhead. And before I bought the property, there was nothing there, so they would leave the point of the confluence of the Tred Avon River's north and south fork and go directly to their site, which this indicates the federal channel, and they would run along the bulkhead to their sites, direct straight line. When I purchased the property and started putting boats there, it required them to go further out. So they've lost the ability to push the empty barge.
Because your marina is 40 feet from the channel.
Yeah, from the federal channel buffer zone. And the federal channel is actually on the opposite side of the river. They operate on the side closest to me because it's the easiest point to get to their spot. So that whole section of the bulkhead has been undermined. They said, well, I was aware
of
that.
So they now have to go outside the channel.
Yeah.
To get away from here.
Yeah. So what happens is they have to move an empty barge out of the way, and they use the power of the tug and barge behind it to do that. And that barge is left free. And then what happens is they have to get that barge when they've tied up the full barge, and then that whole area gets scoured by the tug. So it would fill back in this hole that's being dug.
Right.
So the elephant in the living room is this barge is too big for the river.
Yeah, but that's not one of the proposed conditions of size of the barges, right?
I know.
Yeah, but Mr. Administrator, why not? It's obvious that we're putting 10 pounds of potatoes into a 5-pound sack on a gorgeous river where we have all sorts of investments in oysters and wetlands. And, you know, this is not exactly high-tech systems that we're delivering up there. It's what? Aggregates? Why do we even need to bring the aggregates in? Why can't they produce them on the shore? But let me just ask, I guess I apologize for drifting into another subject, but why not a special condition that says these should be 150-foot barges and small tugs at a minimum?
I thought that was outside the purview of what
I could recommend for a special condition.
What is your purview?
Purview is would be a direct effect on the wetlands that are abutting or in right around the property that is being applied for. I think that was my...
Yeah, but say we proposed as a tourist attraction that by the Queen Mary and bring it up to Tread Avon.
Or
Chop Tank or whatever. I mean, really. What about special conditions that limit the inappropriate size, which it sounds like is at the bottom of all this?
Why don't we move on to hear from the applicants, and maybe we can answer some of those questions, and we'll maybe call you guys back if we have any further questions. Thank you very much. We're going to go on to Perrin Bean and Warren Rich, representing Vulcan. Good morning.
I'm Warren Rich. I've lived a good part of my life right around the bend of this facility. I want to echo your thoughts, Governor. I was George H.W. Bush's lawyer in Maryland when he ran for office when your father ran. And I know the family. I was introduced to them by Mac Mathias many years ago. I'm not here to tell you I'm a Republican, but...
Well, I just lost you 2 votes right there. I'm teasing.
It'll be what it'll be. Mr. Controller, I'd like to answer a couple of your questions. Because the story you got here today is absolutely, unequivocally untrue. First of all, did you know that the closest oyster bar is probably more than a mile away from this site? I'm sure you didn't. That's the fact. What goes on at this site has nothing to do with that oyster bar. And in fact, the federal and state guidance for the closest oyster bar and all the oyster bars in the Tread Avon River are that those oyster bars that you're planning have to be 250 feet away from the closest marker in the channel and 175 feet away from the channel. The paramount use recognized by Maryland and every other colonial state, as well as the federal government, for navigable waters is commercial business, commercial navigation, maritime commerce. That is the preferred use. All of the cases in this state say that an oyster bar is anywhere near a channel, the boat can run it over and tear it up and not be responsible. There is a preference in the law for maritime commerce. And the purpose of those requirements imposed by the federal government and by the state of Maryland is to make sure the oyster bars are not anywhere near the channel because they are not a preferred use of the rivers. So the important point is what goes on here at the site, I should say I was a Norwegian seaman as well. What goes on here at the site has nothing to do with any oyster bar. Any oyster bar. It's not within the purview or jurisdiction of this board to even look at that issue. But we've looked at the issue and we've looked at the law. And we are not smothering the oyster bar. As a matter of fact, these exaggerated statements that we're ruining the Tread Avon River, which I lived on a good part of my life, where I taught my kids how to sail right in front of this facility, where when I would turn the boat over because I was not a good sailor, I would have to take the boat and push my younger kids back to my house and walk through the mud and the silt coming in from the roads. In a nearby area. So I know the bottom very well. But let's briefly talk about the site. The site is not ruined. I've seen barges and tugs come up and down that river probably a good part of my life, especially in the 70s and the 80s, in the early 80s, I think, when there was more marine traffic there and the channel was clearer. There is no damage caused. I went out and I personally looked at the claim that there is an undercutting of the bulkhead. First of all, the bulkhead's been they put a new bulkhead in a little bit further out, I believe, from where it originally was. And there's no change. And in fact, Mr. Bean, who will come up and tell you about his conversations with Mr. Schroeder, will tell you exactly what Mr. Schroeder and his partner have stated about that. There is no ability. Let me just read you a section here, which I think is important, just so you know what we're talking about. This is a response from MDE with respect to regulation of vessels. Not from me, from MDE. Response to this issue. Regarding vessel operation, the tidal wetlands program lacks the authority to directly regulate vessels operating within navigable waters of the state. Such authority lies within the Maryland Department of Natural Resources and the U.S. Coast Guard. But that's not in conjunction with the wetlands permit at all. That's a different issue. There's no prop dredging here. Prop dredging is the intentional attempt to deepen a channel and to do it over and over again. And this letter from MDE explains to you this is not prop dredging. Yes, it is true that on occasion, because of the siltiness of the area, the prop doesn't dig into the bottom. The prop is turning the sediment that is suspended and the siltation in the area. It is not digging the bottom. It is not digging a hole. On occasion, it may hit a high spot, and it might unintentionally, not purposefully, cause a little bit of silt to show near the surface of the water. Just like when I leave my boat, my dock, on a medium tide or a low tide, I don't have enough water, and my boat might stir up a little bit of silt on the top. That is not endangering anything. We're talking about a mud flat. We're talking about a mud flat there. We're not talking about any vegetated wetlands. The report from MDE indicates that there's no damage to any wetlands. That this is not this is zero damage to wetlands. We're not destroying the bottom. What we're trying to do is be a good neighbor. Now, if you want to put them out of this company that's been there since 1951, out of business, you can attempt to say, well, you have to use a smaller barge. There's no authority for you to do that under the law. And typically, it would put the company out of business. This company supports probably half of the contractors on the Midshore. It'll put thousands of people out of work. And we're talking about a private matter between our neighbor and us. And we've indicated on the record, in writing, that if we cause any problem to the bulkhead or we cause any undercutting, we will fix it. Vulcan is one of the largest sand and gravel aggregate company in the country. It has places up and down this the bay. It has, Mr. Bean will explain to you exactly what goes on with respect to each of the facilities. If our neighbor shows us that we're causing something, we will fix it. This is a private matter. This is not a matter for the Board of Public Works to be the adjudicator. I want to, before I offend anyone too much longer, I just want to. This company means a lot to me. It was my first client. It has received permits, and I have gotten permits for them to do mining and distribution throughout Maryland and even in other states. This company has evolved. It was in Easton, it was the old Arundel Corporation, and then it became Florida Rock. Now it is purchased by Vulcan. This company stands behind its name. It will do the right thing. It will resolve the differences with our neighbor, which are basically private differences. It is not going to destroy the oyster bars. It has no impact on the oyster bars, because some young person stands up here and says to you, we're destroying the Tredegar River, which, in fact, the oxygen content of the Tredegar River is higher today and last year than it ever has been in many, many years. I want to point one other thing out. There are issues here of jurisdiction. We have said to you and to everyone that asked us, we will abide and make our best efforts to carry out all of those conditions that the board may or may not want to impose. We will do that and extend our best efforts to do that. There's no issue with always trying to do the right thing and extending out to help the community. Vulcan's record is impeccable in this respect. It helps you build your oyster bars, as you may or may not know that. It gives material to do that in Maryland. The authorization to impose a condition which is not even related to the site, not related to the ecology of the site, and to try and control maneuver vessels is beyond the jurisdiction of this board. And when you look at the enforcement procedures of MDE and all the laws, enforcement laws, they had no authority to enforce any such thing, unless there was some purposeful prop dredging, which Vulcan would not do. This whole issue was started and acknowledged by Mr. Puda after the report and recommendations were made by MDE. Here's what he says. He writes to Mr. Puda. He writes a letter to one of our employees. Hi, Johnny. We met at the informational hearing for the Vulcan dredge permit in Easton. After that meeting, I met with you and a few of your colleagues and addressed some of my concerns that were outside the scope of the permit. What he obviously meant was a license. Mainly about the tug and barge operations throughout the Tredegar River. That's what began this. There was a recognition that these issues were way outside of a request to license a maintenance dredge operation, which they had since 1960s under Rivers and Harbors Act, even before the wetlands law was ever evolved. So, in closing, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bean, who has a whole lot more experience and talks a whole lot clearer than I do on these issues. We will abide by the conditions to our best efforts. We are on record as writing that.
So let me just ask you. Obviously, MDE recommended approval without these conditions.
Yes.
There were concerns by a number of folks about some of the issues, which they now have agreed to these conditions and support your application. You say you want to abide by all the conditions. What's the issue with us approving it with the conditions?
There's no authority for you to impose it.
That's just not true.
Well,
I beg to differ. We are the final authority. The BPW does have the authority. That's why you're before us today. So you're hurting your case by trying to make a false argument like that.
Well, you have the authority to issue the license, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. No question you have the authority. Otherwise, you wouldn't be speaking before us.
Sure, I agree. I wouldn't make a stupid argument
Maybe
like that.
Maybe we should hear from Mr. Rich.
One further thing I want to say. There's one condition on there that we've indicated in writing. I don't know what Mr. Morgani has given to you, because we are not privy to what he gave you. There's one condition on there that we did not want to...
Which one is that?
That condition is to put a tidal benchmark in so that the riverkeeper can either call us or call MDE to complain that we're there or we've arrived at a MEMA water time of day. That condition is clearly illegal. It basically deputizes the riverkeeper and gives them the authority as the enforcement officer for the Treadhaven River. There's no what purpose would that be to put a benchmark and say this is mean low water? What is the purpose?
Didn't you just say you were going to abide by all these things and you've already agreed to abide by all of them? You just don't want to.
No, I'm pointing out, sir, that
now you said it's
illegal. This is the one condition I don't see how it affects or impacts or is involved with the maintenance ridge permit. How is that even related?
But didn't you just say you were going to try your best to abide by it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We will abide by every condition.
Okay. Why don't we hear from
Mr.
Bean. Pam Bean?
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Mr. Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, my name is Perrin Bean. I work for Vulcan Materials. I'm the area manager. I've got probably somewhere around 15 sites on the Chesapeake Bay that I'm pretty much responsible for. I'm also responsible for all our tugboat operations, so I kind of work in that whole area. I had a bunch of stuff I was going to talk about. A lot of it we've already talked about, and I'm not going to go there. As Warren talked, you know, Vulcan is a large operation, been in business forever. The site there at Eastern Point's been there since the 1950s. I've worked in that area probably since 1991 is when I first started working just in the Eastern Point area. So very familiar with the site, what's going on there in the past with, you know, as over the last years we've had, three acquisitions. You know, originally it was the Rundle Corporation, then we was acquired by Florida Rock, now we've been acquired by Vulcan. So, but it's basically the same business, same people, still running, you know, same company. Couple things. We currently, in most cases, we try to maintain and keep a dredging permit on site all the time. Keep it active to where if something, you know, if you need to come in there, if it starts silting in, whatever, you can dredge it and do whatever. It's been 10 years since we dredged this site. And to me, that says I think we've done a pretty good damn job of keeping the sediment from building up, any spillage going into the water, you know, to go that long. We've put in most of our sites now what we call a spill protection, where we have a screen, have a plate that comes down and sits down over the barge, so when the material, when the excavator or crane is swinging back and forth, they're able to catch anything that falls off. They then can bring it to shore. Two reasons. You know, we don't want to lose material, you know, for one, and we don't want to be putting it in water. So, from a dredging standpoint, I've overseen multiple dredging operations where we come into a site like this and, you know, we dredge out, we get our permits, we go in there and we dredge. So we're very familiar. We will do this work ourselves. It's not like we're going to contract somebody else to come in and do it. We know how to do this. To answer a couple of the questions, one to Mr. Comptroller, you wanted to know why not just use material from the Eastern Shore versus barging material in. I-95 is kind of the dividing line. Everything west of 95 is hard rock. Everything east of 95 is sand. So what we bring in to the Eastern Point is hard rock. It comes out of our high grace quarry. And it's, you know, it's used for asphalt paving, concrete, and everything else. Now, we also take and bring sand off the Eastern Shore over where they don't have it. So, you know, a lot of times we've got backhauls set up to where we're backhauling. Um, couple of comments that's on here I just wanted to touch on. Whenever we apply for a permit, the first thing we do is we go visit all the neighbors. We want to make sure everybody's on board, understand what we're trying to do. I guess in September of 2016, when we applied for this permit, my on-site management went to all the neighbors, talked to John. At that point, really was no issue from anybody. Through this process, it was requested that we go back and meet with Mr. Pluta and the neighbors. We met with them. We actually ended up with a conference call with John and his partner. And in that call, the conversation was, we don't have any damage yet. We're concerned that through this maneuvering, we're going to end up with damage. And at that point, when we told them and we submitted the letter, as Warren said, that, you know, we're responsible. If we do something here, we're going to take care of it. But through those conversations, we sat down and said, okay, what can we do? How can we help this whole situation? And condition number 4, 5, and 6 is actually what we come up with and come back to the neighbors and MDE and everybody and said, look, we think we can change the approach we come in here to avoid having the backwash blowing back up there. You know, we're going to work on doing that. Turning the barges, you heard a lot of conversations about the barges turning right there in front of the dock. The reason we have to do that is our boats are model bow boats, which means it has a B front. And when the barge is empty, the tug would go up under. So we have to push from, if it was turned around, we was pushing it from the bow. So we have to push from the stern. So we have to turn it around so we go back out. Well, we got looking at it. Coming in loaded, it's not an issue. So what we've been doing for the last several months, we're turning the barges long before we get there. So we basically push them in backwards. So when the time comes to go out, we don't have to turn them. We still have two barges in there. We have to shift them. We take and go back out. So, you know, that 4, 5, and 6, like say, you know, basically they was our ideas. We said, hey, if we can do this to help, this is what we'll do. As far as the barge size,
well, before we get to the barge size, which isn't one of the conditions, what are the issues that you have with the three conditions that you oppose, or the four conditions that you – I think you've agreed to 3 or 4 of them.
Number one, we do that at most sites. That's the bathymetric survey where you go in and survey it prior to doing the dredging. Once you dredge it, you go back and do, you know, post-survey. And it shows, okay, we didn't take too much out, or, you know, we got out what we need.
So that's 4 out of the 6 that you're fine with.
Not an issue whatsoever. Number 2, I do have some concern with that. One is, you know, we're talking about placing it out in the water where everybody can see it. We can't just go put in a dolphin in a tide marker out in the middle of the Federal Channel or, you know, anywhere's there. One, it's going to create other issues for other boat traffic that I don't want to be liable for. And really, at the point that we're coming in and we now see this, it does us no good. Our tug captains, you know, they're online. They can see. They know exactly what the tides are doing. And they're coming in. We're target and schedule to try to come in on the highest tide we can, but you can't always do that. And that's where some of my concerns with these are, is when we say, okay, you can't never come in. You know, we're going to do everything we can to avoid coming in on a tide lower than mean low water. Have always done that. So that's
probably hard to get a full barge in on when it's below.
Exactly. I mean, one of the reasons that we're dredging and the conversation about, well, if we dredge this out in front of the dock, then that really doesn't help. It does help. I mean, we're right there turning them barges. and keeping that dredge down. One, you know, the loaded barges are not shoving up into the silt that's built up in the front. Our crops are not getting into it. So, you know, no question that helps with the whole issue.
But there is a provision in number three for a force majeure, so that you say you aim to do it and you want to do it, but sometimes it happens, it's prevented. Doesn't this take care of that?
To a certain degree, yes.
So we go back to number two, really, and you're concerned about a liability. Is that it?
If it's placed out into the water.
And there's a
mistake. Number one, we'd have to get core permits and everything else to place anything out into the water. But what does it really help? By the time we get there, you know, number two is saying that we cannot enter our dock or leave our dock if it's lower than the mean low water. We're there now. We're sitting in the North Fork with a tug, and, you know, we come in there, oh, it's, you know, 6 inches lower. Are we going to sit, wait? I mean, that's just creating more concern, safety issues, and really it's a Coast Guard, you know, regulation that we can't be just wandering out there sitting. So that's the concern on that one.
So it's really the number two and number three that you have the biggest issue with, and the other four are okay?
Yes, sir.
Any questions? Can you
I have a question.
Sure.
So how big is Vulcan?
Big.
How big is Vulcan?
Yes.
They're the largest aggregate producer in the United States.
So Mr. Rich said that I guess if we turn this down, that somehow it's going to bankrupt Vulcan. That's what I heard.
No, I think he was trying to make the point that
put us out of business at this site.
They service
put you out of
224 businesses on the shore that rely on these materials that really are thousands of jobs and could hurt them if they're no longer able to do
that's
business.
Right.
And they're the largest aggregate company that's delivering these things to important businesses, and the whole economy of the shore could be in trouble.
Yep. We submitted in the package. It's a list of 230-some customers that we supply on the shore.
Okay. So, economic devastation, I'm not in favor of that. But if we could maybe understand if we – are these barges and tugs bigger?
Smaller.
Because they're smaller. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, you know, let's go back into the Arundel days. You know, our barges that we used to bring in was 350 feet long. They went from 300 to 350 feet. It's all the same tugs. Tugs are the same as they've always been. That's never changed. The barges we're coming in now are 275.
And what were they 10 years ago or before the Anne Arundel days or whatever year? Were they ever smaller? Were the tugs ever smaller?
Not that since I've been involved in them.
Since 1991.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So the statement that the river is too small for the 275-foot barges, what do you say to that?
I don't agree to it. I'm, you know, okay, so the turning the barges, you know, you got a loaded barge now sitting there, and you got to turn the other barge. That's an issue. I can see that. I mean, we're tight in there. That's where turning them before we ever come in takes that away. I mean, we feel like we've addressed that. And maybe it should have been something we've been doing all along. You know, but it's when it was bought up and we sat down and discussed it with everybody, we said, hey, this is an answer.
I hate to continue because someone downstairs might take our jurisdiction away.
Right.
You know, this is really unfortunate that we're able to, out in the light of day, discuss something that is of concern to the lower shore. So I'm trepidation of what the powerful people downstairs may take offense at. But with that, I'm happy to turn it over.
Yeah, sure.
Could I understand that what you're saying is you're concerned about any liability of your putting in the marker, and then, despite the fact that this is your practice, number three, and you think it's the right thing to do to put it in as a condition, causes you concern. One aspect of two, as I understand, that causes you concern is not just liability, but you said the process you have to go through with the federal government of the coast to be able to do that.
Yeah, we can't just go put a marker
in. Put a marker in.
Number three was never our. We've never recommended it. We've never agreed to it.
Well, you made a good point. Barges can't just float around in circles out there.
But presumably you do try to not go at low tide. I mean, that's just the reason. I think you said that into the record, actually.
Yeah.
Did you not?
Mm-hmm.
We try to avoid coming
that's
in.
That's what I'm saying. Mr. Magani, the condition number two, this is just a question. I have no idea what the answer is. Question number two about the putting up the mark, the benchmark. Why can't we just do that? If that's important, why can't? Why does the licensee have to do it? Wouldn't it be better, in fact, if we did it?
I don't know who would do it.
DNR?
Do you want Mr. Morgante back at the podium, please?
Send me down.
The comptroller volunteered to go out.
Yeah, maybe it's a legal question.
David Bohannon, counsel to the board for the record. Good morning. We had some conversations about this in the sense of what the marker would look like. And I think the point to point out here is that there are a number of dolphins, which are essentially a variety of pilings already there that are owned and maintained by Vulcan. And certainly, when Bill was explaining to me what he anticipated the marker to look like, there would essentially be a mark on one of those dolphins to indicate that water level, not its own separate device.
We were definitely thinking an existing dolphin or something would be able to...
Would basically be painted with a line or something of that sort that would indicate that title.
Maybe we can
so
add...
So why would that be so difficult?
You were talking about
no
not putting another dolphin in.
Right. If you put it on the breasting dolphins where we come in and lay our barges up against it, my guess is it would be gone in a day. Just the barge, as we unload the barges...
It bumps into
instead of shifting them down, so they're sliding. That's the whole purpose of the dolphins. That would be the concern. It's just keeping it.
So it's a practical concern then.
Right. So
if you put it on those, yes. Then it's how do you keep
and
it
maintained.
So the condition was we were trying to write it to be as broad in whatever practical way Vulcan thought it would be there, just to be something is a bright line. Is I think obvious here. There is some contention between various users of this North Fork. And the thought would be that if there was this restriction on
I just can't believe
there,
you can't work it out a way
that
doesn't
line.
Create more work
right.
on their
yeah.
part
sure.
or nor more liability on their part. That was my real question, not having to go through get a new license on their part, but have a bright mark that you feel is an appropriate bright mark. I don't know, some sort of indelible, maybe a putting in a metallic substance. It doesn't seem like rocket science. It ought to be rocket science. Is it?
Yeah, I also don't know if, perhaps John at the boathouse or I realize we aren't as familiar with exactly what's down there. I was there once. I've seen pictures. But, given somebody who's really familiar with the site, it seems that there has to be a place to put this mark that already exists.
So if you took out number two and you just went ahead and put something in and understood there would be something in, would that achieve the same purpose?
Sure.
Don't say sure if you don't think so.
No, if indeed it's going to be put in. So there would just need to be agreement. We'd have to work out where that would be put in.
Well,
well, like every bridge in America has markers, high, low, and they're just
magnetic markers, and they're like stop signs. You can see them. And the idea is that's the benchmark. And my concern is that we don't that all of these bathymetric measurements are done by, you know, a reputable firm, not by me, not by Vulcan. It should be done, and then we have a baseline of which we're talking about.
Could I just ask why you're up there again, sir?
Where they go on the, go right on the breasting dolphins. The breasting dolphins are those piling clusters that you see in the water that the tug and barge would lay against.
So are you talking about Vulcans?
It sounds terrible when we're talking about putting something on a resting dolphin. It just sounds worse than it really is.
Thanks so much.
We should leave the dolphins alone on the resting
dolphin. Right. What about the dolphins?
Sir, the breasting
dolphin. Can you come to the microphone, please?
I'm sorry. The breasting dolphin that we proposed, that is in one of the diagrams I gave you, that they say they can't do because it's in navigable waters, is not in navigable waters. It's not in the Federal Channel. Basically, it would denote where their barge accesses their property without hitting our property. And boaters don't travel in that water. So I don't know what liability there is. But
if there's a concern, addressed.
It seems like we're going to need to separate this one out for potential separate vote. I'm going to look. Our job here, I think, is to find the balance between making sure that we're protecting the environment, making sure we're protecting the river, we're addressing the issues and concerns of the neighbors who are impacted and affected, and the concerns of the riverkeeper. Vulcan is a good company. It's been operating here since 1951. They're really important to the Eastern Shore and 224 businesses. It's their property. It's 4/10 of an acre. They're trying to dredge and repair the bulkheads, which I would think would keep sediment from pouring into the river. MBE approved this, recommended approval with some conditions. Our staff here, working with the opponents, came up with a list of six additional conditions, four of which the company says they don't have a problem with. I think that we're striking the right balance between the economy and the environment, and I would make the motion that we approve the application with the four conditions that everybody agrees to add, and take out the two that we have disagreement on. And I don't know if there's a second to that motion, but that would be my proposal.
Governor, I would second it with this understanding that Vulcan, that there will be a benchmark, that Vulcan will make every effort to move loaded barges and allow loaded barges to approach or depart when it is at the benchmark or higher. I'm sure there are going to be people watching to see that that's done. And the understanding is not just environmental, but that all of these criteria have a nexus with our responsibility for protecting the wetlands. That is our job. And I believe, and have a letter from the Attorney General here pointing out, who will defend us in court if anybody wants to take us that far, that these conditions do, in fact, meet the authority of the of Board of Public Works and allow us to continue to support the industry, not just Vulcan, but the companies on the Eastern Shore. And with that, I would support the governor's.
Thank you. So there's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. All those in favor?
Could I just make a comment also, because I happen to disagree with my distinguished colleagues, and I happen to think that Vulcan Construction Materials should accept all of the conditions, plus an additional condition about the size of these barges and the size of these tugs. Stand up in front of us and say that the Tread Avon River, absolute jewel river, I thought it was nothing but millionaires that lived along there, but gorgeous. It's like something out of England, Cotswolds. That we have to put, that we have to put up with a tight fifth of a obviously too large barge to somehow sustain thousands of jobs. And if someone could Google Vulcan, I'd appreciate it. Let me know how big this major company is. And perhaps Vulcan could say, yes, you know, the right thing to do here would be to downscale these huge barges that come in. And we're a huge national company, lots of resources. Maybe we could figure out a business proposal that would allow the river to absorb this kind of traffic. So I reluctantly vote against, will vote against this provision based on the fact that, according to the riverkeeper and the gentleman that owns the marina, I believe, and the company's own testimony that it's a, quote, tight fit, unquote. Really? One of the most beautiful estuaries in Maryland? Okay, so I am in agreement with my colleagues, I think, that we can put whatever conditions we want on this.
Actually, there's a motion on the floor that's been seconded.
Yeah, so I'm just...
Sounds like the vote is 2-1.
Well, let me just finish up, if I could, because I happen to think, based on what has been presented today, that there's an incompatibility here. And to say that that's not within our jurisdiction, or that's something the Coast Guard or something the federal law or something some other department, Department of Natural Resources, has a responsibility for, and that we are a 1951 company and you shouldn't get involved in this because it means thousands of people lose their jobs. What a bunch of nonsense. I mean, this is 2019. Yeah. It's 2018. There's a whole new approach to protecting the environment. And the fact that we're sitting here saying, oh, we've got statutes on the book that limit you. If we want to do this, we can. I think, frankly, is not particularly the right message. I hope Vulcan does get the message about the protection measures. I would put all of them in addition, requiring that these barges be half the size. But I don't. I'm on the losing side of this. But I will return to my subject of oysters. I think to stand up and say to us that what we're doing at this point has nothing to do with the oyster beds that we've planted. I mean, really. That is an embarrassment to hear that, given the testimony of the riverkeepers and others. The Tred Avon Oyster Project is a collaborative effort between the state and federal government to build 147 acres of oyster reefs in the Tred Avon River as part of the larger effort to restore the oyster population in five of the bay's five tributaries by 2025. So I happen to value that. I certainly do not believe the testimony that digging up or having our prop hit an unfortunate mound of dirt and mud somehow doesn't affect the oyster beds that we're putting in there. So I certainly hope the appropriate agencies on the oyster beds are vigilant to prevent any activities that have the potential to compromise the progress we've made and the millions of dollars that we've invested in this incredibly important initiative. And obviously, I happen to disagree with my folks on the board here, but the testimony today is pretty clear. The Tred Avon is challenged by this operation, and what we're doing is basically saying, well, that's A-OK with us because we have a bunch of antiquated, out-of-date laws on the books that permit us to do just about anything we want to do. And so I vote no.
Very good. Let me just say that, you know, I'm extremely proud of the work that the Department of Environment does. We recommended approval Our Secretary of DNR can tell you about the great progress we're making on oysters in the Tred Avon and across the bay. Bay grasses have tripled. The water quality is the best it's been in a quarter century. And our administration has put $4 billion into cleaning the bay and its estuaries. And we've made tremendous progress. We've restored all the money, the billions that were drained out of program open space and the Chesapeake Bay Trust and the Chesapeake Restoration Fund. And obviously these guys are following the rules that were recommended by approval, and they've agreed to almost all the conditions that all the opponents wanted. So it's not exactly like they're destroying the environment, and we're protecting, I think, the river. We'll make sure, and our agencies will be diligent. We also want to keep those folks employed and all those businesses on the shore. So I think we struck the right balance, and the motion carries 2-1. Are there any other questions on the remainder of the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
I would just like to point out, simply point out, on the Secretary's agenda, if this is where it is, A3,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's just very interesting. An emergency saline solution procurement because of the ongoing tragedy in Puerto Rico and really almost destruction of their industry. A lot of people think that's past history and not impacting us anymore. You can see it actually is impacting us very directly and very seriously. And I'd just like to point that out.
Do you want to have anything? Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve? There is. Second. 3-0. We're going to move on to DNR real property.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, sir.
Controller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 7 items on our real property agenda for your approval this morning.
And Secretary Belton, you are going to be diligent in
yes,
protecting
sir.
The oyster beds and the resting dolphins.
Governor, can I just say, this is a question that comes up at various times, and I've raised it, and I'm raising it again, about not your diligence, but about how we go about making sure that the conditions we put in all these things are, in fact, implemented and monitored. And I understand that it is DNR, basically, but also MDE.
MDE, who just left the room.
That does this. And if there's some way that... I'm just always wondering when we approve these if, in fact, they are being monitored with the small number of people you have on staff. And if sometime we could have a presentation on how this is done so people know when they agree to conditions, these conditions, in fact, are going to be enforced.
I'd be happy to sit down and chat with you about that.
Yeah, we'll get together with Secretary Grumbles and you guys can talk about that. Any other questions on DNR?
Approval.
Second. 3-0 on DNR. We're moving on to Department of Business and Management.
Good morning. For the record, David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, the Department has brought 6 items for your consideration. Item 5 has been revised, and I'd be here to address any concerns or questions you have.
Any questions on DBM?
I have a question on 1. I think this is a question, the Professional Transportation Strategic Business Process Development Services. This came before us.
I got Joe Palachuk.
In the past.
Send us that.
Right? But this is a revised.
Governor
approach.
And Madam Treasurer, for the record, Pete Ron, Secretary of the Department of Transportation, Maryland Department of Transportation. So this particular one has not come before the board previously. There was a different proposal that I believe came from DBM. This one has not been presented to the board previously. If you would like
proposal.
An explanation of it. I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. This is the department's proposal.
This is,
perhaps.
Yes,
could
the Department of Transportation.
Briefly, I mean, it looks very interesting. It looks great. Could you briefly?
Thank you. And so I would start by this. This is designed to support us continue with our performance management system that we have developed over the last 3 years, which I might be biased, but I believe is one of the best performance management systems for a DOT in the country. And I would mention that we have quarterly reviews of our performance measures, and this occurs on May the 8th is our next one, and I would invite any members of the board to stop in at any time at the Maritime Institute to see how it has actually done. So this is this work is to facilitate the continued improvement of our performance within, and I believe we are up to 118 measures, all focused on 17 tangible results that we are delivering to the citizens of Maryland. So it is very interesting. This is one of the areas that I get excited about, and again, would invite you to witness how this drives performance within the DOT.
I think that would be very, very interesting, because one of the problems with some of us were around when MDOT was created, and there were stovepipes, and it was really different modalities were different agencies, and to see them come together and be able to be managed in an efficient, cross-cutting, and accessible way seems to me it's a dream vision we had for a long time that this mechanism may in fact help finally realize.
Yeah, I think we've made a tremendous amount of progress, but this should help us continue to move.
It does. We've reached the point where, you know, the easy stuff the first year you deal with, and then it gets more and more difficult as you are digging deeper and deeper into processes. And that's where we're at, is really tackling those processes that are hindering us from doing things better.
Great.
Could I ask, if I could, just what's an example of what you just described?
So as an example, the time that it takes us to undertake an A&E, an architectural and engineering contract, when we came in, the average was 49 months. I'm doing this from my memory, but it was taking average of 49 months. I believe it was just a short number of months ago that we brought to the board an engineering contract that had been in the works for 84 months. We have made progress now, and we brought that down now that we are at an average of 19 months. And the goal is still to drive that down further. But I just can't, as an example, why that matters is I can't imagine a business submitting a bid on work and then waiting 50 months to learn whether they were selected or not. It was unreasonable to the business community, and it was very inefficient for us. And so this process, as an example, that's how using this, focusing on improvement, having a measure and reviewing it every 3 months, and having the people that drive that have to stand up in front of about 150 people and explain where we are and what progress we've made. And maybe the board is aware, I'll just as a little bit of color, is that what I'm known for is I have a boat air horn. And if anyone, when they're talking about results, I believe results are about what you've done, not about what you're fixing to do or planning or whatever. It's what you've actually achieved. So I have an air horn, and anytime anybody uses a term like that, I actually blow the horn. And it's pretty much...
Would you keep that away from the governor, please?
Actually, every time the secretary tells me we cut something from 84 months to 19 months, and I go, why can't we do it in 90 days?
it would be amazing, and that truly is. The best DOTs in the country are turning their A&E contracts around in 3 to 6 months.
I mean, our entire administration has been built in 39 months. You can't approve an engineering contract in 84 months. That was the beginning of the O'Malley administration. It's crazy.
I trust there are other areas of efficiencies, too.
I will provide you the most recent copy of our accelerator, which shows the tangible results and then the measures we use that are, to the best of our ability, our outcome measures that are measuring what we're actually doing.
Sounds like MDOT's best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes.
Any other questions on BBM agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. We're moving on to university system.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 5 items on the agenda. Would answer any questions.
Good morning, Mr. Evans. Any questions on university system?
Move approval.
Second. Easy day today. Jeff?
Thank you.
Thank you. 3-0. Move on to Secretary Leahy and Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 4 items on the agenda. However, we are withdrawing item 2IT, and I do have representatives available to answer any questions you might have.
Questions on do it. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
3-0. Everybody's ready to get out of here. I think that one item like that, everybody's ready to move along. We're going to move to the Department of Transportation agenda.
Good morning again, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller. For the record, I am Pete Ron, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 12 items that we're bringing before the board today, and we are withdrawing item 12AE at this time.
Questions on transportation?
No, but item 6 reminds me of the stats that came out this week about the port. That we've gone over, what was it, 38 billion tons in the last year, the most in 4 decades. That's good.
It's huge. The progress we're seeing at the port, and frankly at the airport, and these other economic engines for the state, things are humming like a good electric engine would be.
And we're still first in vehicles, in cars?
We are.
Yes.
We are.
Yeah, I think I would second the treasurer's comments. I mean, we've been breaking records at the Port of Baltimore and at PWI Marshall almost every single month. We're the number one airport in the region, which most people don't know. They think it's Dulles, but we're blowing the doors off of Dulles and National. And the Port of Baltimore is just breaking records in almost every category. It's one of the best ports in the country, and we're really very thrilled with the progress of I see Ricky Smith is here from the airport. I don't see anybody from the port, but they're both doing a terrific job.
We do have someone for the port, just not Jim White.
I only recognize Jim White. Somebody hiding in the back. Thank you. The whole team is doing a great job in both places.
I know that time is of the essence at this moment, but I would like to say that it's really important to understand at the port, it doesn't just happen by itself. I mean, it involves the team that is there, led by Jim White, that is constantly having to juggle issues between the unions and the stevedores and the freight shippers, and to ensure that they keep growing, it takes an active program to explain the benefits of the Port of Baltimore to the rest of the world, and they're doing it, and they're coming, and we really are just bursting at the seams there, there's plans in place that will continue to grow. And we're excited about what this does for the state of Maryland.
I would say that Secretary Ron and Jim White and I were all last week entertaining Willenius Wilhelmsen, who we signed a 30-year extension with, and they're a huge driver of the port and a critical part of our economy. And I think they're thrilled with Baltimore, and it was good that we had their whole boards of directors here showing them the port operation, and I think they were saying that we had the best port administrator in the world, according to them, and they go everywhere, and that our port was one of the ones they thought was doing the best job. So thank you very much.
Can I put in a plug for the state treasurer's office with that?
Absolutely, you can. Well, I mean, the comptroller already plugged his office, and I'm going to put a plug in for the governor's office after that.
Chief Deputy, will correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my recollection that a few decades ago, not I, but Lucy Moore, the treasurer of the state of Maryland, went on a trip to Eastern Europe and met up with folks from that company.
Wow.
And started talking to them about the port. And they showed an interest, and then she came back and talked to Governor Schaefer and brought them in. But
we may have to send you out around the world to bring some more shipping companies in.
I'm not Lucy. But it is interesting. It's great.
Any other transportation questions?
I just want to make a note about Secretary Ron, because the Commission on State Debt that he serves on, along with Secretary Brinkley and Mr. Merritt and the Treasurer. Do we have one other member, or is that it?
There's five for the Commission on State
Debt. Oh, Delegate Jones. I left Delegate Jones off. I'm sorry.
She's not.
But the Committee that recommends the state does not include the SDAT. It's on your commission that meets all four times. But anyway, there are five members on the committee, yes.
We want to thank all of them.
Yes.
Yeah, no, but I want to just note for the record that this is an incredibly important exercise we go through, where we make recommendations about the amount of debt. And I served for 8 years on that commission when the debt would regularly rise. Now, that doesn't mean the property tax rises, because all it means is the general fund has to commit more. And in the last couple of years, Governor, I have to give you credit, because it's your agency heads that are there to change the tide. It's been a much more moderate approach. Now, of course, that's blown to smithereens once it gets over downstairs after a legislative session. We limit it, and then they expand it. That's okay, because if we hadn't limited it, they would have expanded it even more. So I'm appreciative of the new moderate climate the state has about debt, and I believe companies like Wallenius have the same appreciation for the fact that the state seems to be in a more moderate fiscal posture right now.
And our bond rating agencies, who continually give us AAA bond ratings, they feel the same way about us. So thank you.
Could I just say, as chairman of the commission that the comptroller refers to, that we have for a number of years used criteria to estimate affordability of debt, and Maryland had decided that they want no more debt than the equivalent of 4% of state wealth, which is this income is a surrogate for state wealth, and 8% debt service to constitute no more than 8% of the appropriate revenue. And we have stuck to that year after year. Actually, the amounts that the governor proposed and the final amounts that are in the capital budget have been within those criteria forever since they were adopted. And I think that is, even though there may be fights about specific projects or what gets funded and what doesn't, the dedication to the affordability level based on set quantitative criteria has been kept. And that's not true in many other states. And I think it's an important statement.
Well, thank you. I wouldn't characterize them as fights, but, you know, we have discussions. Negotiations, maybe. But thank you very much. Is there a motion on the Department of Transportation? Second, 3-0. Last but not least, we're going to go to the Department of General Services. Nelson.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Reichert, the Deputy Secretary of General Services. The department has 32 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We'll be glad to answer any questions you have at this time. Governor, thank you for recognizing Officer Kirk and his actions.
Thank you. You've got a good one there.
He is very good.
And I'm happy to be able to do so. Any questions on DGS?
Governor, I would point out the comptroller might be interested in number 14, which is Strathmore Hall, which he was very helpful in creating.
It's a great facility.
The next step for Strathmore Hall. Appreciate it very much.
I'm going to perform there one time.
It's a great
skills.
Place. A great place.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Any other questions on DGS?
Move approval.
Second? 3-0. Thank you. That concludes our Board of Public Works. Thank you, everyone.